When you join Patreon, you get all the back episodes, the back catalog, including 3 episodes with Aaron Sterling, 5 episodes with Zach Danziger. You get the Hal Blaine, you get the Jim Keltner, you get the Steve Ferroni, you get we did it all, baby. So, patreon.com/IHTpod. You support the show, keeps it going, and I'll just keep making them. Enjoy this episode with Kevin Murphy, recorded in Nashville.
Very alley.
That
I wanted to make sure I pronounced it correctly.
Let's see. So numbers are moving. We're good. Yeah. Okay.
Right. I'm a loud ass talker.
I'm in Nashville with Kevin Murphy. Kevin, thank you for coming over today, my man.
It's good to be had, sir.
And this is a long time in the making. We were talking about that before, that we've been in touch. I didn't go back in the messages and take a look, but we've been in touch for many, many years. But this is how the show goes. It's got to be in person.
Yeah.
And it just
Cheers.
And cheers. And there were times, I'm just going to add for the listeners, there were times you were on the road. You were somewhere, hey man,
it might happen.
I'm going to be there, and it didn't work out. I was out of town, whatever it was.
Then when I didn't know you had moved, I was in L.A., and I was like, bro, I'm in L.A., you want to do this? And you were like, buddy, I'm 1,500 miles away.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, a lot of moving going on. But by the way, where are you from?
You know what? There's a funny bit that happens with my live show where John, the artist I play for, when he does introduce the band, he'll just pick a town from whatever state we're in and say that's where I'm from, because he has no clue where I'm from.
I love it.
And he refuses to learn where I'm from. So that's a kind of a loaded, funny question for our bus.
And by the way, but that's actually brilliant, because he picks a town wherever in the state you're playing.
Yeah,
so place goes nuts no matter
what. They're just like, yeah, you know, I think they get it that it's a bit, because the band is always cracking up when he's like, from Sioux Falls, Kevin Murphy. You know, I think everybody kind of gets that he's doing a bit.
It's still brilliant.
But it's still, it's a funny little moment, you know. But I am from I tell people right outside D.C., but that's the same thing that people do. Anyone from a big city.
Are you from Maryland?
No, I'm from Central Virginia.
Oh, okay.
I'm from a town called, I'm from a very small town called Orange, Virginia, which is like this little, tiny little...
Is it near Aldi?
Where it is from. I don't know what it's near. It's you know...
You're near the Blue Ridge Mountains?
I am, but here's the thing. Orange is near a town called Charlottesville, which people have heard of, where University of Virginia was. So I tell people Charlottesville because that's where I ultimately ended up, later in life. But I grew up in a tiny little town in Virginia. But when people ask me, it's just easier to say D.C. because it was like an hour away. That gives them the region. It's kind of like if, you know.
It's okay. My ex had the same thing. That's why.
Say Joliet, Illinois. You're just like, I'm from Chicago. You know,
I get it.
And people are like, oh, cool. So I just say right outside D.C. But I went to school in a rural area, smashed myself up in a car accident when I was 16, and my parents moved me to D.C. proper, like to Arlington. So, it's not a lie when I say D.C., but I grew up kind of rural. Then I went to the city, and then I ended up.
You smashed yourself up in a car?
I wrecked myself up good.
Oh, okay.
I'll show you the pictures. My sister is at our family farm this weekend, fixing it up and pulling some stuff out. And she found some old, photo albums. And she sent me a picture. I'll show you a picture of me before I wrecked my face. I look like Ralph Macchio. Now I look like, you know, 76-year-old Sylvester Stallone.
You don't look a day over 70, my friend.
Is that thing rubbing the desk?
Yes, it was. And I hear it, and I was like...
You want to put it on the pop?
No, I
don't. Pop holder?
Fuck it. I'll just, you know... It was funny. Miles McPherson said, they have stands now.
They make stands. I don't know if you knew this.
I know. We're old school.
You can go down to the Guitar Center of the Mars, pick yourself up a stand.
As I said to him, you can watch podcasts, and everyone gets their own mic. And you have headphones, and it would look...
Should have brought you two SM7s.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. And a ring light.
Exactly. That's the beauty, too. You're working, interviewing with all these guys in the music business, and everyone's got a fucking studio. Come to me. I got a studio.
Yeah.
Sounds great. Of course you got a studio. Everyone's got a studio.
Yeah.
They got the mics, and I'm using this, you know? So,
What? It works. Get yourself a deal. Get yourself a free Zoom out of this.
I could.
You should.
Well, I like the idea.
Work the system, yeah.
talk about working the system. You were mentioning renting out to traveling nurses, but that's another story for another podcast.
Yeah.
And either they get it or they don't. If you know, you know.
Right.
And that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Now, Kevin, so when did you get here, though, is the question.
I had a buddy. Oh, this ties into what I was telling you before we started rolling.
Yeah.
I had a buddy who is now gone, who now passed away. He and I were in a band on Warner Brothers together years ago. And he came to Nashville and he called me one day and was like, buddy, I'm playing for this guy who's on American Idol and he's a real idiot. But his music's, you know, you don't even need to audition. You don't need to really put a lot of effort into learning. But you need to get on a plane tomorrow and come down here. Because our drummer just left.
Right.
And interestingly enough, that drummer, Al, is a very good friend of mine. He had left this artist to go play for this little 15-year-old girl named Taylor Swift, who was just getting started. And the artist, I'm not going to mention the guy's name because he was a real narcissistic douchebag. I don't want to help
this
him out.
This is the American Idol guy?
He's the American Idol guy, yeah. Fake country accent from Detroit, but fake country accent and just a real sociopath. But anyway... he's one of the guys in Nashville that's kind of like a cautionary tale and also a badge of honor if you got through playing with him, right? Anyway, this my buddy Tony was like, just fly, meet us in Florida, and just like take this gig. It's like shooting fish in the barrel down here. And I was like, really? Because he and I had toured. I had been on tour since 93, like 200 dates a year up on the Eastern Seaboard, up and down, right? So I, you know, my road chops were pretty strong at the time. And I flew in, did it, and I think that was 06, and I was still in Tonic. I was still doing Tonic stuff at that time, but they were, you know, they were kind of deciding whether or not to, how hard they wanted to continue, you know, so there were months where there weren't gigs, and I was doing construction and shit, and he was like, get down here and do country, and I was like, I don't want to do country, and he was like, no. And I remember he said this, and I thought he was full of shit, and now I say this all the time, and I'm like, nah, man, it's like that Cuts Like a Knife Bryan Adams record, but with steel and a fake accent. Like, right. it's pop,
right.
You know, and it really was, yeah, especially this guy.
Yeah.
Was just, you know, it was pop. So I just flew down and I literally met that artist on the way up the ramp. And it was, I remember it was at the Charlie Daniels birthday bash or whatever down in Tampa. And it was hot as shit. And I didn't know anybody except my buddy. And I didn't know the songs. I just had charts that I had written on the plane. And, you know, artists met me on my way up the ramp and it was 20,000 people. And I just sat down and went after it. And like, you know, a couple of years later, I was that, you know, everybody had bailed out of that band and I was his MD. And I was, you know, the interesting part of that was, you just asked how when I got here. So 06. But the funny thing about that is Tony, that friend of mine, that got me in, that guitar player, he and I didn't know a lot of the people in Nashville. We didn't have a ton of friends down here. So when we got control of this guy's band, because we were horses, we were strong. We had been doing hundreds of shows a year, you know? So the people that were like, yeah, I cut my teeth. I do 30 shows last year. You're just like, shut the fuck up. You didn't pay fucking dues, man. You know? So we were strong. So we kind of took control. And when people would quit or leave, we had to replace them. And we didn't know anybody, so we would call home to Charlottesville. So there's a band called Old Dominion here that's kind of a bigger country group. Three of the members of that band were in a band that Tony had produced in Charlottesville. Like, we would just call them. We would call our friend Amos, who was a bass player, who we called him down, and he left for Taylor a year later. He still plays for Taylor 20 years later. Almost. And our buddy Mike, we got him down to play guitar, and then he ended up going to Taylor. And our buddy Devin, we got him to come down, and now he's a studio guy in town. So everybody we've called from our tiny little town in Virginia has risen and is now like, our little town in Virginia is responsible for like 10 or 12 big players in Nashville, and Spanky, who plays guitar for Pink, and like this tiny little town.
Interesting.
Got all of, like, there's all these monsters came out of there. And my neighbor in that town was Carter Beaufort. And right down the street was like Dave Grohl's sister. And like Bruce Hornsby lived up the way. Like, I don't know, it was in the fucking water in Charlottesville, Virginia.
We need to go get that water and bottle.
Let's sell that water.
I should have gotten the Carter water. I should have went over to his well.
Damn. I knew a guy. Now that you think about it, I know a guy who said he grew up with Dave Grohl's sister. It must have been there, because I knew he's from Virginia. Maybe, anyway.
I didn't know her, but somebody told me that.
No, but he must be from there. I'm saying it's got to be the same.
And at the end of the cul-de-sac was like Gina Davis and...
Davis, geez.
Yeah, yeah. And Sissy Spacek lived down the street. Like, it was a weird little town where it was like this... It was kind of bohemian.
I thought she was from Texas, Sissy Spacek.
I don't know where she's from, but she lives in Keswick, Virginia, right?
Oh, she lives in Virginia. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, at least I don't know where she lives now, but I remember, like, you'd see her all the time.
No, she seems like the type who got out of Hollywood. I believe I believe that.
I'd see her at the grocery store and shit all the time.
Oh, no, I believe that for 100%, yeah.
It's like all these little actors. Somebody told me a couple years ago that The Rock bought a big farm out there. Like, it's a weird little town because it's this... crazy little town of bohemian, like, did Dave guys still all own houses there? And
that makes sense. I mean, it's pulling the Chappelle, right? Like, it seems random. Like, he lives on a farm in Ohio, you know, but why not? You know?
I mean, if you got that kind of bread.
And you want normalcy for your kids and all that. And you
That Carter has, he built a monstrous, he bought up, you know, a bunch of land and built a fucking estate, effectively, right there in right near town. Like,
good
he did. I don't know. He might have 100 houses around the world. I don't know where he spends his time. I haven't talked to him in a while, but, like, you know, he stayed around, and Dave did for a while. And, like, you know, all of our buddies, I think I go back there the least of any of us. Mm-hmm. But, like, yeah, it's a weird little town that had all this talent.
Yeah,
all these, you know. So yeah, but that was 2006 when I got down here. Mm-hmm. And
16 years.
Yeah.
I'm the mathematician.
Yeah, it feels longer, but yeah, it feels like I've been here it kind of feels like the only place I've ever lived at this point. You know,
right. It's the only major market you've lived in. And
yeah, I mean, as far as here's the thing.
You never did LA, right?
No, I was there. I was there enough with Tom.
And that's okay, by the way. I don't mean to.
No,
that's.
I have. She's now 26, my daughter Madison.
Oh, that's right. When we were first in touch, we used to talk about her. She was like still a kid, I guess, then. That was like 10 years ago or 9 years ago. That's right. That's right, yeah.
And she's now like, you know, she's a beer and wine buyer for a major brand and like doing her thing. And she lives here, actually. She lives, you know, I don't know how much longer I'm going to keep her in this red state. I think she's going to split at some point soon. With her dude and go somewhere that fits her lifestyle a little bit more. But she was really young when I was touring around a lot. And I wanted to make sure, you know, L.A. and New York, London, although the tours that go out of there, you know, none of them are bus tours that you fly to the first one and get on your bus and then you stay out for, you know, weeks or months at a time. Whereas country... Man, I'm home. I catch a flight on Thursday, and my bus is right now driving towards, our buses are headed towards Denver. I have a show in Cheyenne Friday. Thursday, I'll fly to Denver. The bus will swing through. We'll hop on. I'll climb in my bunk. I'll wake up in Cheyenne. I'll be back Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Or Sunday afternoon. Yeah. So I get Sunday through Wednesday home. But at the time, I thought, okay, I can drive to and from Nashville, from Charlottesville, try to keep my marriage together, try to be a part of my daughter's life, and still try to do this for a living. Now that Tonic is, they're not making me a band member. I'm just a gun, and it's not enough bread, and it's not busy enough, and I'm doing construction, and I can do construction fucking anywhere. I may as well do it somewhere I can play drums, right? Ultimately, I didn't have to. I came down here, and I just got busy, you know? So I haven't done anything since then except for play drums, right? But I didn't want to move Maddie to L.A. or New York. I didn't have the money to. Her mom and I ultimately split up 2 years after I moved down here, after I started working down here. But I did somewhere between 400 and 500 drives between Charlottesville, Virginia and here. And I would do it Wednesday. I would drive down here 9-10 hours, get on the bus, go do shows. And Sunday I would drive back and I would have Monday and Tuesday with my daughter. And then would come back on Wednesday. And I did that for 2 years.
Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then finally I was like, fuck. And I just stayed in the guest room of Tonic's singer, Emerson, at his place for a year. And then, you know, worked my way up. But ultimately, I got divorced and then just stayed here.
Yeah. And became a happier, more peaceful man. in the process.
I'm still hunting those. I'm still hunting those two descriptors, you know, but better, you know.
It gets better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I wasn't as, you know, it was an amicable thing, you know, it was cool. I kept driving back and forth to kind of, you know, be in Maddie's life and try to be a good dad. And ultimately, she ended up wanting to come here after college, or actually in the middle of college, came here for a while and went back to a different college and finished it up. And she was like, I'm just going to fucking come down there, Dad. And I was like, yeah, great. And she stayed with me for a while, stayed with JoJo and I for a little while. And then she got an apartment and she lives right above Kia.
Oh, I don't know where he lives.
Well,
but that's you have Kia to look after. I like that.
Well,
that's
right. I think she's probably looking after him.
Oh, that's a good plan. I like that. Yeah, I like that.
But yeah, I mean, I have a buddy that lives, you know, she literally can walk out on her out her front door and look down onto his front door, you know. So I have a buddy that's near her, and you know, I have a lot of friends that live close by, and she has been adopted effectively by all my group of buddies, the Cocksmiths. You know, she's got a little family down here now. So I'm glad she moved. I she's talking about moving to Scotland or some shit. So, like, I don't know what, you know.
Scotland?
With her,
yeah. Why?
What's her point? Dude's got family over there.
Oh, he's Scottish.
Well, he's American, but I think his family's over there doing, like, business. And so I think they're like, yeah, let's go try that out for a while. Which I'm all for. I think in your 20s, you know, I may not be a good dad for saying this, but I think in your 20s, man, if you're not, like, eating, smoking, fucking, doing all the wrong shit in your 20s, you look like an asshole doing all the wrong shit in your 40s.
Well,
in your 20s, people give you a pass. Oh, you're drunk all the time in your 20s? You know, get your shit together. You're getting older. But by all means, do it now.
I know. It goes both ways. I agree with you in that sense. And then the other part of me goes, God damn it, I wish I'd buckled down my entire 20s and not fucked around. You know what I mean? So I get it. I hear you.
Same.
I hear you. I hear you.
I think she should definitely try.
I have a daughter too. I want the same things. You're like, yeah, come on, just go live your
just
life.
Just go live your life.
God damn
but
it.
But also, but you know, hey, right now she is, last week she called me and she was like, hey, Aaron, my sister Aaron is brilliant and she's the one everyone turns to for guidance in my family. And she was like, hey, I'm about to get on the phone with Aaron. She's going to help me set up an IRA and stuff. And I was like, Jesus fucking Christ. I wish anyone had taught me anything.
Yeah, well, that's...
I basically, you know, my God love them. My parents, you know, they were doing shit. They were busy. So I was kind of just figured it out.
And I'm taking it you didn't wrap yourself around that tree or whatever it was in the car, like being sober.
No, I was kind of a hellion.
Yeah, like you fucked around.
Fucked around and I found out a lot.
But
honestly, I also didn't like, I learned what a checkbook was from the lady at the First Tennessee Bank when I was in college. Like, I didn't know taxes. I didn't know things. I just knew what little I had gathered, you know, as a teen. So like, I fucking blew it a lot. And I was like, holy shit, you're setting up an IRA? I wish anyone had told me what even that was, you know? Because I was like, hey, if you're smart and you just tuck away like $100 and just like every time you can, just match what you can, I was like, you'll be a millionaire by the time you're my age. And I was like, I know you don't want to hear this, but the time between your age now and my age, it goes by in the amount of time it takes a fucking snow cone to melt. Yeah. Like, it will zip by, and for you to be able to walk away from that with 1.1, 1.2, by then it might just be enough to buy a house. You know, who knows? But it's something. And she was like, fuck yeah, Dad. So, like, I'm really proud of her, but I didn't know shit.
Yeah.
So I think the fuck around in your 20s thing works out better for her than mine. Mine, I was just on the road. I was just in vans and trailers and box trucks and shit just the whole time.
Right.
And I had her. We had her when I was 26.
Mm-hmm.
So I was young and, you know, drinking a bottle of Jack a day, doing whatever else came my way.
Whatever they had, right?
Whatever they had.
Whatever was available.
Yeah, if it was on the table, I was doing it.
Sure. Did that all stop at some point? Or are you just like, hey, you know.
You know what? Because
I got some, you know, if you.
The drinking did not. But I will say that the harder stuff, Coke, things that were manufactured by men. I'm proud of myself for one thing. The day I got a page from her mom that said, hey, I fell down at work. And before they would x-ray me, they had to test me, and I'm pregnant. And I was like, well, all right. So when I hung up, I realized that at some point in time, this kid was going to ask me, you know, about my partying, and they were going to ask me when I stopped. And I was like, I want to be able to tell them that I stopped the day I found out they were coming. Wow. So I literally walked into the bar I was playing that night, which was a place called Planet Nova in Fairfax, Virginia, some shithole downstairs. And I walked in and I reached in my pocket and I walked up to my bass player and I handed him an eight ball. And I was like, this is yours. I can't do this anymore.
Damn, bro.
And I stopped everything. I smoked weed and I drank after that. But like, I just thought, okay, the stuff that's really heavy that I'm really going to get some scrutiny for later on in life from this kid.
Yeah.
I want to be able to honestly say, yep, stopped when I found out you were headed this way. And I've stuck and I did.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was, I didn't play well that night. Because I had been accustomed.
You were dragging.
I had been accustomed to, like, I was raging back then.
You went from rushing to dragging.
Yeah, I was a Russian dragon, man. I partied a lot prior to then. Like, kind of constantly. Yeah. It wasn't even a daily thing. It was just like, when I was awake, I was ingesting something.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was asleep, I was passed out, you know.
Right.
But it wasn't, you know, what's funny is I don't have, like, a rock bottom story. And I don't have, like, an AA story or any of that. It was literally, I don't know how I'm wired or whatever. But I was the same with cigarettes. Later, like, 8 years ago, I was like, got to quit these. And I smoked one last one and gave my Zippo away.
I'm done.
And it was it.
Yeah.
You know, quit drinking the same way. And, you know, I just, you know, I've always been able to just kind of stop.
Oh, so you don't drink at all now?
Mm-mm. I'll take a sip of, if JoJo's like, this wine's incredible or whatever, I'll just take a sip of it. But that's more for health reasons. I had, like, really crazy high blood pressure and I fucked up my kidneys and, you know, probably from all the stuff we just talked about. And, and had a couple of medical emergencies. And a few years ago, the doctor was like, yeah, you're going to die. He was like, you're absolutely not going to know your daughter as a 35-year-old if you don't stop everything right now.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, cool. I guess I'm not eating meat or smoking cigarettes or drinking whiskey anymore. And he was like, yeah, you're never taking Advil again either because your kidneys are mad at you.
Oh, jeez.
I was like, okay, cool.
Oh, are you vegetarian now?
I'm vegan.
Vegan?
Yeah.
Nothing with a face?
Nothing with a face.
Well, how long has that been going on for?
5 years.
Four years. Easy for you?
It's easy. The people that make it seem hard...
Well, it's the travel. I've always heard that. Since
it's harder on the road.
Right, that's what I was going to get at with you. So how do you prepare or do you...
There's an app called Happy Cow, which can tell me what's nearby me.
Okay.
With country music, it's difficult because I play a lot of really rural areas where, bless her heart, someone, bless her or his heart, somebody cooking the catering that day will come up to you and be like, here's your vegan food. And it'll be like, fucking beans with bacon in it and, you know, shit like that. They don't really get it.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, there's been this...
Do you cheat when that happens sometimes?
Nah.
Okay.
It's just easier to not eat than, because at this point, I used to be able to just... I mean, I'm half Italian. I grew up predominantly on cheese.
What are you, Irish-Italian?
Irish-Italian.
Classic mix.
Yeah. Classic.
That's what I am, buddy. Come on.
Classic rage mix.
Oh, you got
Let's
it.
Let's rage it up. I was raised on, you know, meat and cheese, you know, so I know my stomach can handle it, but after not doing it for a while, a little bit will mess my stomach up. Just, you know, so it's easier just to not, it's like, I could cheat, but then I'd be in the Port-a-John, and it's turned more from a physical, like a doctor thing. And now it's like, I've learned so much about it now, and I don't get preachy with my friends because all my friends eat steaks and shit like that. But, you know, when they ask me, I remind them, hey, that toddler you have that you love so much is dumber than the pig you just ate. So I wouldn't eat your kid, so I'm not going to eat that pig. It's pretty simple for me. So it's turned into a bit of a moral thing for me just because I'm like, man, I don't want to, you know, I've heard enough things and people in my lifetime. So if I could just minimize that a little bit with what I eat, it works for me. I don't preach to my buddies and, you know, a few people have been like, oh man, I got the idea to try it from you. And I recommend it to them just because it's easier now. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 especially, I hear stories about people that try to be vegetarian on the road in the fucking 80s and it's cardboard. You got cardboard and cheese slices, you know. If you went vegan, there's nothing to eat. But now, shit's easy. There's an Indian food. Oh, is there an Indian restaurant nearby? Cool, I can find something. Thai? Cool, I can find something. I can even, you know, I can survive. And there's lots of little companies now that you can, like, order food and just pour hot water into it. It's like an MRE, basically. It's garbage, but you can get through the day.
Well, we'll have to get rid of Brendan Buckley and get you the Morrissey gig. That's what we'll
do. I don't know that I could do that.
We'll set you up.
I fucking love Brendan, man. That dude, he's like...
Who doesn't? Whoever says, I don't like that Brendan Buckley, you know, he's such a dick. I mean,
I have some friends, my buddy Al, who went to Taylor Swift. I was paying attention. Taylor's first drummer.
I was listening.
Al's still here. He's one of my good friends. My buddy Mike, who now plays for Taylor. There's a handful of friends I have where if somebody doesn't like me, I get it.
Oh, we're both the same.
It's you're like, the same as me.
Oh, gee, I wonder why.
Like, I get it. I can be abrasive. And I think people I think people think I'm like this extroverted asshole, but really what I am is a really socially awkward, loud introvert. Like, people think introvert means quiet and extrovert means loud, and they're wrong. What it means is, how does this person recharge when they are depleted emotionally, right? So when you need to recharge, need to be around other people to recharge, you're an extrovert. When you need to, like, go inside yourself, you're an introvert. And I'm actually just an obnoxious introvert.
You're also an extroverted introvert?
Yeah, something like that. JoJo's helping me figure that out. But, like, yeah, I and a lot of my energy that goes outward, where I'm just obnoxious, is just really, like, I'm awkward. And I don't, I feel like a fraud, fucking all the time. I feel
imposter syndrome.
Yeah, fucking 100%. I feel like I'm about to get found out. And the thing is, I know, I've done the math, and I know that, oh shit, I've been doing this for a long time. I know that I can do it, and I know that I'm good at it, and I know the work that I've put in, and internally and physically to play. I know the barriers that I've gone past, so I know I'm not a fraud. But that nothing can convince my mind of that, you know, and it's intrusive. It's constant. And, you know, so, like, that little battle is that's kind of one of the more kind of fun aspect. But I'm not, you know, what's funny is I'm not actually, you know, when people are like, you're an extrovert, I'm like, you'd be surprised how, like, I told Rob, my buddy Rob last night came to dinner. Last night I told you I had dinner with Miles and Keo and Ben and my friend Rob. We haven't gotten together in a while. And we were talking afterwards. Rob was giving me a ride home. And I was like, man, that was the first time I've actually tried to socialize since the pandemic.
What?
I don't really go out.
Oh, okay.
JoJo and I, like...
Because you go on the road on the weekends and then you just come home and you want to just fucking...
I have 3 days and I don't go out a lot.
That's understandable.
I'll do a coffee. But, like, I also... The pan kind of rewired me a little bit, and it's hard for me to be around groups of people. And on the bus, man, luckily the gig has progressed to a point where we have our own band bus. There's 7 of us on a bus, and those guys will go play golf. And I like golf, but I don't, so I can have the bus completely to myself every day until about 4. And it's just quiet, and it's the only quiet I get, you know? And I'm alone, and I basically don't leave the bus. I work out in the front lounge. You know, I don't go to catering because none of the food there is for me. So I eat on the bus with the stuff I brought, and I just hide. I've had our assistants, our production assistants that kind of set up our bars and do all that shit. I had one of them a few weeks ago, Katie. She was like, I literally don't see you until 7:50 every night. Like, I don't see you at all. And then you'd, like, walk off the bus ready for your show and put your ears in and walk to the deck and go. And I was like, that's the way it should be.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that weirdo drummer who's he doesn't leave the bus.
I kind of don't, you know. Sometimes I'll walk around to see the town that I'm in or whatever. And honestly, that's one of the beauties of kind of being a hired gun is that, like, and it's not, you know, I'm sure people think, like, oh, that's not a problem. But, like, if you're Carter Beauford, you ain't going to the mall. And if you're Josh now, if you're Freese...
I don't know if I agree with that, but okay. Well, you think Carter Beauford is that recognizable?
Yeah, yeah.
No.
Every drummer on planet Earth.
every drummer, but how many drummers are walking around the mall? Come on.
Enough bro. To hassle him, I'm sure. Freese, especially if you're at your show. Like
Freese goes around. Yeah, he does.
Yeah, he goes around. And I'm not saying he doesn't go to the mall, but like he's getting recognized. Well, and he's taking pictures and he's doing his thing. And when I'm in like Iowa or whatever, nobody fucking cares who I am. And honestly, I don't think that they would care who Freese was in Iowa. He'd just get a drummer. But like, you get some like I love the fact that like in Hired Gun world, like Sting doesn't, you know, the more famous you get, like, you know, I think that it's like a hassle to leave your house, you know?
That's
so
true.
Like, I love being a hired gun that kind of, occasionally drummers will come up, well, JoJo and I'll go to dinner and a drummer will be like, hey, I just moved to town. Can we get, you know, cause like they know who I am in Nashville.
Yeah.
And about, you know, but like if outside of Nashville, no one cares, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of, most people be like, I want to be famous world over. And I love the fact that like occasionally drummers will say hi and that's it.
Yeah.
And that's really cool. So I get to do this star, adjacent thing where I get to play music and sometimes it's a big crowd and sometimes there's like that energy of what, you know, that hot shit energy going on of like a big show. But ultimately I know that that's all kind of like smoke and mirrors for 90 minutes. And then I don't get the big money of being like super famous, but I also don't get any of the hassle. Like I look at John sometimes, John Party, the artist I work for, and he's always on his phone, like dealing with stuff, his business. And I realize, oh man, that guy, he's pretty cool to hang out with, but he's got like 50 employees and he's got to worry about like paying for all that. And I'm like, man, you know what? There's a penalty for the fame, for sure, that guys like us, I don't have to deal with it. I clock out, I make my money, I can walk around town, I can go to a pawn shop, you know, but I've been out with John before where, bless his heart, you know, he just wants to go get a beer at a sports bar and just have to sit there taking pictures of people all day, and that's great. These people pay your bills, and, you know, he's polite to them, and he wants to, and he joins in, but I'm like, man, I would just, like, take my burger and go home, you know, so good, I like Hired Gun kind of, I like the anonymity of just kind of just doing what me and hundreds of my buddies get to do, you know, men and women that have worked their way up and they get to just like do the weekends and go home.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Everybody in Nashville's kind of like that. I don't see them Monday through Wednesday, really.
Right. Well, that's getting back to that—the idea of just wanting to be at home, yeah. Especially if you're married or whatever. You're in a relationship. Yeah. You just want to come on. I mean, what? What
yeah. Me and JoJo what work on
hang
a
out
record.
Hang out in a club. Hang out in a bar. I mean, come yeah. on. I mean,
you know, we'll go to shows occasionally. We went to Tori Amos a couple months ago or a couple weeks ago and saw Ash.
You saw Ash, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know him personally, but you know, and I didn't, you know, I didn't hit him up for tickets or anything like that because I'm not buddies with him. But fuck, he's good.
Yeah.
God damn, that's a good show.
That kid's got a future.
He could make it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
we'll go to shows occasionally, but like, I'm rebuilding my drum studio. We're working on her record. We have three dogs. My daughter's down the street. So like, I just want to fucking, go out.
No.
I don't go downtown unless there's a reason to go down there. Like that place scares me.
Yeah, well, of course. Why would you? Again, why would you?
Well, and I have a lot of friends.
That, I mean, okay, to support a friend.
No, yeah. The funny thing is, in Nashville, there's this weird thing where there's kind of like this attitude from some of the road dudes, from the road men and women that are playing that kind of give attitude to the guys that are in town doing the Broadway thing, which is predominantly covers. And, you know, everybody down there has got to fucking slag through Don't Stop Believing at some point because you're playing to the tourists and you got to give them what they want. And there's kind of like some attitude that gets kind of like thrown at the people playing downtown. Man, fuck that. I'm in awe of those people. Like, I couldn't figure out and memorize and like, the body of work you have to be aware of to pull that shit off. You have to go from a Hank Williams tune to a fucking Journey song. At the drop of a hat, like, fuck that. I couldn't fucking do that. My mind doesn't work like that. I know people down there that have thousands of songs ready to go.
Yeah.
Like, right now, they can play any George Strait, any Bryan Adams, any pop song you've heard in the last 35 fucking years. They can do it right now. And it's like, you guys, I'm not going, I'm scared to go down there.
Yeah.
I got buddies down there making 100K a year just playing covers down there. And it's like, man, good for you. I'm scared of that shit. I ain't going down there.
100K a year?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, careful, because now a lot of guys hearing that are going to be like, I'm fucking, I'm going to Nashville.
And oh, covers. Dude. You know what? That's already happening. I was told a couple of weeks ago of, you know, one of the hot shit, flashy IG drummers hitting up some friends of mine being like, oh, man, I want to get one of them country gigs. And it's like, man, you really don't. You think you do, but the way a lot of the IG drummers play, they think they would get down here and flourish, but I haven't seen anybody online that's like hot shit, like flashy drummer, that would last through soundcheck with the guy I play for.
No. That's different.
He'd literally be like, you're fired, I'll play this show acoustic.
Right.
You know? And so they're already moving to town, you know, and I think there's a little bit of a wake-up call. Once everybody gets there, there's a guy right now who is kind of online blasting one of my buddies. Like, he's like really causing some, you know, some, he's really very stressed out. And this dude thinks that my buddy like stole his album credits, right? Like, stole credit from him. So he's in a full blown raging meltdown. Nobody knows who he is. He's just some fucking guy. And I've seen his clips and he plays all right or whatever. But he's really furious about one of my buddies, you know, and he doesn't...
One of our buddies.
Yeah.
I just found out about this.
But he can't grasp this very simple concept that if somebody tracks a song in 2016, and 2 years later, they call you to, you know, you're doing a session for that same artist, and they just redo that song, they want a newer version or a better version or whatever, that both of you... Both of those drummers, and 10 more perhaps, may not be aware of each other's existence, especially not their existence as a player on this record. They might all think that that's their take when they hear it 3 years later, because like busier drummers, I don't remember what the fuck I tracked last week on any of the sessions I did.
Well, I know.
I did it off a chart. I'm certainly not going to remember my beats in 4 years, you know? And this guy's like raging, and like my buddy was like, oh man, sorry, I did a session in 2016, I'll pull that down. Apologized a couple of times. This dude's still raging because he thinks that somebody's after him for this like credit on this unknown artist on this unreleased song from 7 years ago. And the guy's just so fucking mad. It's like a lot of people move to this town, they get their asses handed to them, and they ruin their rep before anyone knows who it is because they don't grasp how it works. And it's like, oh, this town is very close-knit. Everybody knows everybody, and no one, I've never known anyone, I've never even known of anyone that's knowingly tried to fuck somebody over, not in Nashville. I've heard stories of other towns, but down here, it doesn't happen, you know, because back in the day, dudes would just fucking roll up on you and knock your teeth out, but now it's a little more, you know, civilized, but like, you know, we all protect each other, you know, and it's weird to see sometimes people come to town and they just want to like, they want to show everybody how great they are, or, you know, what a badass they are or whatever. And they don't realize that kind of everybody here was the best in their town. Like, wherever they came from, if you see a guy playing covers on Broadway or somebody in a fucking wedding band or somebody on a big-ass tour, some of them got lucky and they were just kind of, they found their way here and they got some traction. But for the most part, everybody left the town they were in because they had tapped it out. They were as good as they were going to get there. So, like, nobody here is really terrible. There's some drummers you're like, he could work on that, or she could improve this. But those people are really good. So somebody coming to town trying to just big dick their way in is just kind of comical because it doesn't matter. You're hang, you know, the 22 and a half hours a day you're not playing the show, that hang on the bus is what you get paid for. The show's free. You know, you got to hang with these assholes on a bus. If you can't make that cool, you're done.
Yeah.
I've known some drummers that are rippers. Just unfucking believable talents that just didn't make it. They got down here and just nobody cares because they were dicks.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that'll do it. Yeah. That'll burn you down right there.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we've talked about that many times on the show, that idea. This is not just about your ability to play. We've all known those guys.
Yeah.
More savant-like.
Yeah.
In that way.
It's weird that
they're
people...
brilliant at what they do, but exactly, like, can't hang, can't... Yeah. You don't want them on the bus. You don't
Yeah. And when you get the guy, when you get the players that aren't particularly phenomenal, that,
right?
You know, they're just players. Mm-hmm. You know, they play in time, and
that's okay.
They own drum sets for sure,
and they're better. They're preferable to the
yeah. When right. the, when those guys, you know, those, a cool one of those mm-hmm. will go farther mm-hmm. than a ripper, you know, with Dennis Chambers chops and a bad attitude. But like, if you're one of those players and you have a bad attitude, you're fucked. No one's gonna care.
No.
But I do like that this town, you know, there is opportunities kind of for anyone. And I've heard of other drummers that kind of have some traction in the town and kind of have a name. I've heard of some of them kind of putting people off when they're like, hey, I want to move to town. And they're like, oh, man, you don't want to do that. It's kind of crowded and blah, blah, blah. And fuck them. That's bullshit. Everybody that wants to move to my town should move here. Give it a shot. You're either going to make it or you ain't. But I think everybody needs to chase it. I think everybody should. Same with my daughter. Same with your daughter, you know? Chase it. You think you got it? Fucking go get it. Go get it. And if you don't get it, you'll know. You know? But like when people are waving off people to move here, I think every time I meet somebody on the road, they're like, man, I want to move to Nashville. I'm like, fucking do it. I can't tell you there's no gigs. Everybody I know is finding shit to do. Come on.
Yeah.
You know? I typically try to say, hey, are you like the hot shit, you know, dude or girl in your town? Like, are you tapping out wherever you're from? Then absolutely. Are you not? Well, maybe get that, grab that trophy first and just make sure you're not going to get swamped. Because learning a song and the amount of time it takes to listen to it once and then playing it, that's a skill in that. And that's very Nashville, you know. I don't know how many times I've, you know, bailed out an artist on tour or done a local show where somebody was like, oh, can you come down here in an hour or whatever? And, you know, where I had to like learn a set in less time than it would take to learn to play the set. I just had to like pick out chunks and get through it in front of lots of people. And, you know, you can't, you know, it's a skill set that seems to be it's not only in Nashville, but everybody in Nashville is real good at it. You know, that last minute bullshit, that give me a chart and I'll wing it kind of attitude, because that's what we're all thrown at, you know.
You didn't know the system, right, when you got here?
No, but I think that luckily I kind of always did that. When I was a kid and I was kind of by myself on that farm, I would listen to Zeppelin records or Rush records or, you know, fucking Billy Squire records, you know, like, you know, Bobby Chouinard, you know, drummers like that. I would listen and I would play. And I did this thing that I didn't realize was going to save my ass later in life and maybe be the cornerstone of my career. I didn't realize it, but I would put on it turns out it was kind of a brilliant thing to do that. I think it started out from being lazy and high. and skipping school, I would be sitting out at my garage out on the farm, and my closest friend was 30 miles away, and cell phones didn't exist. So I was alone a lot. And I would just sit out there, and I would turn on the radio station, and I would just play along. And a lot of it was shit I didn't know. So I would just be playing along with songs I didn't know, and trying to kind of keep up and chasing the tunes. And the funny thing about that is you don't realize the work you're putting in, but you years later it dawned on me that, oh, that really honed my ability to hear a change musically and kind of know that there was instinctual change. There was a change that was coming, you know, that I could hear the guitar part building or the vocal change. I could hear a key change approaching. You know, there's always a walk up towards a fucking, you know, key change or something. I would learn these little techniques, these little musical, without even knowing notation at the time, I would learn the comp, you know, the composition of songs. So I would play like a Bryan Adams tune and then a Jane Child. Remember that? Don't wanna fall in love. I remember playing along with that and playing along with like, it would even be like stupid shit, like Sheena Easton. And then it would be like a Def Leppard tune. And there would be a country song. Because I, you know, whatever pop station I could get in Orange fucking Virginia. And I remember a song by the Hooters. they used to play along with. You know, like these
and we
all,
danced.
Yeah, that was it. Then we danced. Yeah, so I would play along with whatever, and I didn't know the tunes, and I would have to get through them. And then the next song would start. So I didn't even have time to, like, bask in the success of having gotten through that Genesis tune they just played, because now there's a new song that's already starting, and I would do that for hours. Like, and not some hours. I would do that for, like, seven hours. I would do that instead of go to school. Not that that's what kids should do. Okay. But that's what I would do. Yeah. So, you know, jump 20, 30 years later when I'm in a session or I'm on stage and, like, John, we'll be playing right along and he'll just start a Dwight Yoakam song. And a lot of times I don't know it. But I can chase him. Mm-hmm. And I can chase him because I spent my teens chasing, you know, Bryan Adams and Metallica and Paula Abdul, whatever was on the radio. You know, so it doesn't freak me out. I'm just like, oh shit, different song. And I kill the SPD. I kill whatever click is going on and I chase him.
Yeah.
And I think that just doing that when I was 14.
By the way, you keep mentioning Bryan Adams and I'm going to deduce, it's not that you're such a Bryan Adams fan or you're a Mickey Curry fan.
Goddamn right, I'm a Mickey Curry
That's
fan.
What it is.
Exactly. Mickey forever.
That's why you keep mentioning Bryan Adams. Mm. It's really about Mickey Curry.
It is, because I think I do this. I did this series. I call it a series. I only did like four of them. And a lot of my friends are just like, man, you really got to do that again. And I'm going to do it again. I've had friends like, you should start a podcast. And I was like, I'm not going to join. I'm not going to jump into that fray. You fucking guys. Yeah, the people that I like that do it great. And I ramble. I have ADHD and I am ungovernable, you know, mentally. And I don't think I could keep up with it. You know, you were telling me before you started rolling about how, like, yeah, I'm going to, you know, how you're making sure to stay ahead of the curve with your content. And, like, I have to remind myself.
Which just gave everybody a laugh, but go ahead.
Everybody that knows you is just like, fuck.
Everyone that doesn't know me knows, like, this. There's no consistency whatsoever.
Wait a minute. So my Patreon, I don't think I have the mentality for that, but I did this. I might relaunch this thing where I was calling, like, Under the Radar. I think I called it, and it was like talking about the drummers, the men and women who I think should get more props.
What women?
You know what's funny is
I'm just busting your balls because you had to. I know you had to do that to be politically correct. And I was just challenging you. Like,
not at all. I think a lot of people
don't get the credit.
They don't.
And what what women?
I forget her name. Hang on, I forget her name. But there was I think it was like Modest Mouse just hired a girl from their hometown because they were like, she's the right one. But, like, people give Meg White shit. You know who would fuck up the Black
Stripes? I don't give a shit.
You know who would fuck up the White Stripes? Kali Uta.
Of course.
It would be fucking wrong. Of course. So people, like, I want to talk about people, and she gets props. So, like,
the only thing I would say to that, and I, again, this is not me, it's in other words, what we've heard, I'd say, we've all heard, is like that Jack White supposedly played a lot of that on the records. I don't know if that's, I don't know that.
Yeah, I don't buy that.
See, I don't know.
Because I heard his, you know, Dead Weather drumming, and you know, I mean, not Dead Weather, I heard his drumming on that other project, and I don't think it's the same drummer.
I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
But then again,
on.
I've been wrong. I didn't think it was Peter Criss on the album cuts of Alive 2, but I've been told that it absolutely was, that Gene confirmed it. So anyway, but like...
Oh, interesting.
I'm not, you know, my point was that, like, you know, I don't think drummers, they love talking about the big names. And they have a hard time. No one's going to mention, you know, Sue Hydropolis's work with Joe Jackson or Mickey. They don't mention Mickey Kirby. Sure.
Bill Gibson from Huey Lewis.
Bill Gibson from Huey Lewis.
Right. We don't exactly.
They don't mention some of these names. I know. And listen, you know,
Roger Taylor from Duran Duran.
Yep.
No love whatsoever.
Yep. And I do try to add, women into the conversation because I think that, now here's the thing.
I'm being a wise ass.
I totally know, but I wanted for the listeners.
I was just more going, who does
for
who
the
doesn't
listeners,
get Gina Schock?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the funny thing is, Gina Schock, if you were like breaking down like skill set or whatever, I don't care. She was influential in that time.
I'm not knocking it.
You know, but like I think I want to add that just because there's our entire...
But the Corrs did not play in those fucking records. I don't care what anyone says. I'm not having it.
You know what? Maybe they didn't.
I don't think they did because it's so slick and clean and it's a family, right? That was the idea. And I'm going, bullshit. So why didn't you have careers?
So this family is all studio musicians?
I was saying, why didn't you get careers? as studio musicians.
Interesting.
After that, because it sounds so fucking slick.
It is clean.
And I'm like, no fucking way. There's no way.
Well, any family, I think there would be some movement.
That's the only one I just would say, no fucking way.
Well, I don't disagree with that.
I'm not having that.
I like to add in kind of everyone in the conversation just because, you know,
I like the unsung hero thing because it's fucking true. And there's guys where you're like, he's great. I love that guy. I love that sound. I mean, talk about a great feel sound. And you think, well, nobody seems to care. But then again, like you mentioned him, and other guys go, the drummers will be like, yeah.
Well, that's the thing. If you're talking to Mario Colleri or Ehlich or fucking Chamberlain, and you're talking to somebody that's a fucking hitter that can play, and you're like, yeah, Yogi Horton. They all go, oh! You know, say Yogi Horton's name in front of Ehlich and watch his fucking pupils dilate.
Of course.
You know, because it was just so fucking free and muscular and, you know. And, you know, but other than the players, even regular drummers, they'll live and die an entire lifetime without knowing who Yogi was or Bill Gibson, because they're like, Huey Lewis is fun to kind of mock now, you know, for the 1984 kind of sound, but that he was fucking great. He's a great drummer. Mickey Curry was one of the, I mentioned him. How many people have Jerry Gaskill affected, you know, playing drums for King's X that never turned into a massive band, but every drummer I know is like, fucking Gaskill, dick.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so I like doing that. I might do a little thing, but as you know, you got to commit to this couple hours of like editing a thing together, and that may sound like nothing to
you. Just put them out. You don't have to, it doesn't have to be, again, that you're thinking consistency. Fuck that. Just put them out when you want.
Yeah, I think I'm going to try to just do it more because I have this long list. Dude, I'm going to show you my list when we're done. I have this list of notes.
Of guys?
Every time I'm sitting on the bus and I'm just fucking zoning out, I'm like, fucking Walter Orange,
right,
from the Commodores. Like, nobody talks about
Joe
Walter
Vitale.
Nobody talks about some of these people, and I'm like, oh man, if I can bring attention.
Would Don Henley count though too in that, or is that too big a name? Or are you gonna go like, I don't think he's that special?
I think he's worth mentioning because his drumming was perfect for that band. He did some great shit. He's known as a singer. He's known as a singer.
Right, what Eagles song has, like, that's the wrong drumming part? You know
none.
What I'm saying?
Yeah, none. And that's what a lot of people miss about Phil Collins. And they're like, oh, man, he's this cheesy act from the 80s. No, motherfucker. He's the best drummer you've known. Like, he's one of the best. A fucking monstrous drummer.
The best.
Just monstrous. And to miss out on that, and you don't even, here's the thing, it's really easy to be like, oh, man, listen to him and Chester on In the Cage. The 17-minute thing off Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. Yeah, it's phenomenal. But man, hit anything, any pocket that he played, it's sexy. It's really fucking good. And a lot of people don't think like that. So if I can do a little thing, if I can mention these people to drummers, like, I'm unknown, effectively. I play in a country genre. Only people in country know who I am. And I get it. Maybe a few more people find out about me through this or whatever. But like, I'm not a known name, but then the people that do listen to my, see my Instagram or give a shit about me, if they're like a younger player and he or she has moved to town, I'm like, yeah, you got to check out Walter Orange. And they're, who's that? And like, oh, it's fucking Commodores. Dig deep. Dig beyond Brick House. You know, I've met kids who didn't know who fucking David Garibaldi was.
Yeah, well, that's normal though, too. A lot of guys, they just don't know these names. Like you said, Carlos... Oh shit! How am I blank on this?
Vega.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And someone, a listener, we got the Wikipedia page going. I remember when I started this, that was the thing. It was like, there's no Wikipedia page for Carlos Vega.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
How's that possible?
And there's a lot of younger drummers now that will listen to him, and because they've heard other names so much,
right,
they'll be like, oh yeah, man, Picaro sounds great on this track, and be like, no, the fuck he doesn't.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Or Jim Gordon, who, you know, just left the mortal coil after a long, troubled life. But, like, man, people can talk about the mental issues he had all they want.
His tracks
are fucking stupid.
I've honestly never heard or seen a drummer mention, like, fuck him because he killed his mother. No, nobody, let's be real. Nobody cares.
Oh man,
let's be truthful. Nobody cares.
Dude was nuts, and he had a real hard time mentally. And before he lost his shit, holy.
It's like a great story for like your girlfriend to tell the woman who doesn't know shit. Basically, like, by the way, this guy went nuts and killed his mom. But like, we don't give a shit when it comes to the body of work. Is like fuck it. That
right.
It's above everything.
Me, you know. I think that, you know, a lot of times people are only interested in, you know, they read something in Modern Drummer or wherever, they hear these taglines, and I think a lot of people love Picaro and they've really not listened. They've listened to Rosanna. But they talk about loving Picaro and it's like, nah, you didn't, you love this story about this guy that is now iconic, and people my age, you know, they talk about him a lot. But I think a lot of people just pass along the same shit they've heard, and they actually don't do their homework. So if I can do a little thing where it's like, Mickey Curry, you know, Philip Fisher, dig into some old Fishbone.
Wow.
Get your fucking, wrap your head around the shit he was doing in 1992 that nobody's touching right now. You know, I think it's important to mention those. And I only have a small following, but if I can get a couple people interested in some other
Well, hey, moments. I mean, that's why I was happy to get Stan Lynch on. I mean, there's a guy.
Oh, dude, I saw that.
Talk about overlooked.
I haven't listened to your thing with Stan, or I showed that to JoJo, and I was like, I'm going to listen to this.
Talk about overlooked.
And honestly, no
one really ever mentions big influence Stan Lynch.
No, like, and he's one of those people, too, that, like, that... I think of Stan the same way I think of a Mick Fleetwood, where like you can play the beat and it ain't gonna feel right. Best of luck, motherfucker. Because I can play all of the Fleetwood Mac songs and none of them sound right. Mm-hmm. You can try to play that Tom thing in Tusk all you want. It's not gonna roll like he does it. Tonic used to play Go Your Own Way.
You can play Dreams. It ain't going to sound like with those little...
I used to have to do 16th notes on the hat and Go Your Own Way. I did that on the hats with Tonic when we did that cover, but he didn't. He just bounced his hat. Like, he was playing it. He was bouncing eighth notes with his foot and playing eighth notes with the hand, and the shakiness was making it sound like rolling 16th. Like, you can't do it. Now, you'd play Breakdown. Everybody can go... All of us can do that. And it don't feel the same as Stan.
And then because you hear Ferroni do it, and it doesn't quite sound
It sounds like
same.
Ferroni doing
yes,
it, you know?
Correct. And
Ferroni,
we're not knocking it. I'm not knocking it.
No, Ferroni's got a different pocket.
We're not knocking Ferroni.
So when you listen to the early 70s version, there's just a different thing. And it's the same with like Bonham. People are like, oh man, his time was so great. No, the fuck it wasn't. It just sounded like Bonham. So you like the way it sounded like Bonham. It was moving all over the place by today's standards. You know?
Yeah, the moving thing is also an interesting thing, isn't it? Because it's like that was Jordan always talks about that. I think it's a Brown Sugar. I forget the Stones song that like speeds up, but it's like it starts at this.
Go boom.
Well, it starts at this. No, it's not. Is it Honky Tonk? I forget.
Yeah,
by the end of the song, it's like way.
So if it starts, I don't know exactly, but it goes.
I think it's also Brown Sugar though.
It's probably there.
Yeah.
And it probably ends. It's probably like seven clicks up.
Right.
You listen to Lady Marmalade and listen to that thing. It's
but that's what I'm saying.
Clicks.
And the point is that it's perfect.
Fucking who cares?
It's perfect.
There's any
There's no re-recording
song.
That shit. There's no. You know what I mean?
So, it got to the end and they were
like,
that
was
fun.
You don't put it to a fucking click.
And you know, and that's a shame that like a lot of people. We were talking about this at dinner last night. And the funny thing is, when I get together with some of my group of pals, my close friends. We do talk about drums, but not in the same way that other folks do. And we usually don't tap on it very long. We talked about kayaking for 20 minutes last night because Miles was like, I'll go crazy if I don't go kayaking every day.
Yeah.
But we do talk about...
Well, I talked about kayaking with Miles and listeners heard it for about 20 minutes. So, you
he loves it. I think it's the only reason he's fucking not crazy at this point was his goddamn kayak. But like, you know, we talk about drums, but like we just brush on things like we have conversations like you and I are having right now, where it's like, you know, talking about the particulars of like, oh, I listen to any, you know, any track from the 70s or whatever, where it does move like that. And we were laughing about how now the first take is gone. The first take is now, because recording is so easy and because there's so many people that are producers, and I'm air quoting for the listeners, that are producers, but they're not producers. They're song pluggers or they're writers or they're publishers or whatever. They're not fucking, when people are like, I'm a producer, I want to be like, you mean like Daniel Lanois? You're a producer? Like, right. Jeff Lynne, you produce? Right. Or you a fucking, right. You did the demo. And well,
or you a Rick Rubin, let's be real.
And honestly, and I don't need a guy to be I don't need somebody to be a virtuoso producer, but like, there are people that produce that are like interested in the taking whatever this is and making it the best it can be. Now, whether they do that esoterically, like Rick Rubin,
right.
or they tear it apart like Jack Joseph Puig, or they're like Linda Perry, where they fucking rewrite the whole fucking thing or whatever, it doesn't matter. They're in it for the art of it. But there's a lot of people here, especially in this town, they're not really producers. So what happens is they do a lot of busy work to make the artist and the label and the management like happy with them and go like, yeah, they earned their keep. So these days you can do the best take in the fucking world first right out of the gates, and that ain't going to be the one. They're going to be like, yeah, let's just do a safety. They'll make you do 3 or 4 takes just because they want, it's busy work for them. And one of our friends was like, yeah, I never give them my all on the first take because I know they're just going to trash it. Yeah. And it's like this weird little mind game where you want to play your best, but you also know that this weird political thing that they're going to do is going to fuck your best is going to end up in the trash can.
Totally. You know, and by the way, you're reminding me of that. There's always that story, like there's 100 versions of it. The guy, like they go, guitar player, bass player, and they say something about change this, and they pretended, I pretended to do it with
the least glar button.
And then they go, that's it. That's better. It. Thank you. And it's like, you fucking.
Well, and there are some things that aren't fake that you can do. That I'm giving away one of the things I'm going to actually do. I'm filming an Elitch type thing where it's like a course, right? But it's not going to be like a, you know, yeah, you know, like there's a lot of other people. Elitch is just like, here's the mechanics of why you're failing. Like, you can get better if you just do this, you know. I want to do something that's kind of more of a mental approach. And one of the things that I mention in it, and I tell people all the time in clinics and lessons, is that like, if you're playing a regular beat and it's like, and you're pulsing the hat like we do, mm-hmm. up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down. And they're like, oh man, it just feels like it's dragging. You know, they want it to feel more energy. You just chop the hat and go. You just don't pulse the hat at all. You don't have to change the tempo. You don't have to get on the front side of the beat. Don't do anything. Just chop the hat. Just keep the hat very consistent, all loud. And they'll be like, yeah, that feels much. Like suddenly it feels like it's moving forward to them.
Right.
So you can do little things like that where like you just need to give them the impression of speed, you know, or pulling it back or whatever. You just need to make them feel like they're, you know, they're being heard. And it doesn't, you know, they want it, they, you know, you can do little things to adjust the feel that don't involve like changing the kick drum pattern or muting the drum or grabbing a shaker. You can just do little things with the hat or the velocity things that make it feel right. And it's not bullshit. It's real composition, but like people be surprised how small the adjustments are to get something from like not sitting quite right to sounding great, especially for producers or artists or engineers that aren't 100% sure how that machine you're playing works.
Right.
They just want it to feel right. They may not know how to say, hey, can you play? They're not going to say, can you play paradiddles here? They don't know what, you know, the terminology. They may not know what the terminology is. So I think translating what they say into the reality of the kit is an
awesome. That's an interesting thing too, because I've noticed like in Texas there's a lot of guys a guitar player or someone, they turn around and they go, okay, this is going to be a shuffle and blah blah blah, and you're like, okay. Now oftentimes the shuffle means either a train beat or B, a shuffle is like is almost like a Chuck Berry vibe.
Sure.
Okay. So it's often like, here we go again, another guy. Like, yeah, sure, shuffle. shuffle my ass. You know what I'm saying?
You jump in and then.
Well, it's just not a fucking shuffle. You want it. You want a train beat, like I said, or this, but they call it a shuffle.
Yeah.
Or once in a while they flip that too, and you hear like it's a train beat, and then you're like.
Well, they'll say
shuffle.
No, and they'll say things like, "I need a triplet there." They don't need a trip. They don't mean a triplet. They mean three notes.
Right. Right.
That's my thing with that.
This is an interesting thing. Exactly like that thing of like they don't teach us in school kind of thing. It's exactly like they just don't know the lingo.
Oh, and drummers don't sometimes. I don't know how many people call this a six stroke roll, which it is fucking not. It's six tuplets. It's sticking is like a six stroke.
Okay.
They're sticking it right, left, left, right, left. But it's six notes and it's they're triplets. But this is a six stroke roll. It's, you know, it's different. But the terminology doesn't matter. When somebody goes, "Oh, I did a six stroke roll around the toms," you know what they did.
Yeah, they did
the Tony Way. They did the fill.
Right.
You know. But so figuring out what someone means. Like, I don't know how many times a guitar player, a bass player, artist have said, like, "I need a triplet there." It's just three. They want three notes. They don't necessarily want a triplet against the meter, right?
Right.
So, you know, but, and shuffle, when they go, "Yeah, I need a shuffle." Now, luckily, the guy I play for knows his shit. So when
I'm not talking about the guys.
But he'll go, "I need a shuffle," and it means shuffle. But what he doesn't know is that, like, then I want to go, like, you mean like a second line vibe, like New Orleans shuffle, Chicago shuffle, a Texas shuffle, or a Bakersfield shuffle? Because all four of those are different. Mm-hmm. And they're slightly different, and there's different shit, but like, which one do you want? And I know that John means Bakersfield, because he grew up listening to Buck and Dwight. But like, downtown or some other gig, they don't know the difference between those things. Most of them don't know that. And producers in this town, there's a few of them that do, but most of them.
But that's what we're talking about. Like, they just don't know the language. They don't know what they're asking you for. But that's your job, isn't it?
Yeah.
To deliver.
And a lot of them, to be honest, I said this the other day, a lot of them, and I would say most managers, you know, artists in particular, but a lot of producers in town and in Nashville too, a lot of them can tell the difference. Well, everybody can tell the difference between bad and good, but not a lot of them tell the difference between good and great, which makes it difficult to drive the price up for the value of your work, you know. When in Nashville, there's this kind of overarching theme that like everyone's hyper replaceable because there's 10,000 dudes that want my gig. Mm-hmm. Now, luckily, my guy likes me, you know. So
well, I'm good. That thing, yeah.
But you know, there's this, you know, when I talk to people that are fighting it out for gigs, and they're just like, "Yeah, man, I got fired last week," and you'll realize that like they didn't get fired for anything. The artist just wanted to like change things, and he just figured, "Oh, I'll start with the drummer." Like it can be random, you know. And a lot of times it's hard to find those.
So that's, again, these are all different kind of discussions. Like I don't mean that to be like,
for it.
I mean it like that's true. There's a lot of guys who do that kind of John Mayer, Bob Dylan thing of like, "I like to change it up. Like to change it. I like to reinvent myself." And that's just the way it's going to be. It's not personal.
I've seen
And then like your guy, then they get married to the drummer and they want it to last until the day you die. And it's just like...
And you know, I've seen some artists that weren't particularly good, but they're bad at their instrument and their singing and they, you know, and instead of putting their work in, they'll just be like, "I need a new band."
Right.
It's like, no, you suck.
Right. Right.
Now,
right.
I've luckily played for pretty, you know, talented artists, but I have played for a couple back in the day where it was like, "Oh no, this is your this isn't your band's problem.
Yeah.
You're not good at this."
Right.
You know, but I've seen whole bands. I've seen people can their whole groups. They're like, "Yeah, I need to," and it wasn't "I need a change." It was like they were trying to like make it feel better. I was like, "No, you're blowing it." But you know, you know, you're not in a position to really say that. You just kind of take it. But I've had friends that are coming to me like, "What do I do with this?" And I'm like, "Oh, you move on.
Right.
You don't post about it. You don't bitch about it. You don't contact, you know, you just move on. You're not going to teach anybody that, you know, you're not going to teach a lesson to some manager in town. Like you just go find the next thing. If they got rid of you, they got rid of you. If John fires me tomorrow, man." It was funny, as I told the MD a long time ago, my bass player, I was like, "Hey, if there's ever a time you need to change, it's just a heads up. Like, you don't need to like surprise it, like drop it on me like right after bus call. You can tell me you want to make a change and like, I'll help you find my replacement. Like, I'm not going to suck for the next month. You know, I'm not going to purposely tank anything or walk off stage in the middle of the show. I'm a fucking pro. And all that does is ruin my rep. If I did something like that, I'll play my ass off. If anything, I'll play better just to piss you guys off, that, you know, just to throw it in your face that you fired me. So, like, if you're going to ever get rid of me, let me know. I'll give you a list of fucking the best drummers I know that would love my gig. And, like, I'll play my ass off until the last day. Like, you know, I don't, you know, I tell people all the time, and you can't take it personally. And I did. I got fired, you know, by the guy before John, that I was playing with. And I'm pretty sure it had most of it had to do with, it wasn't my plan, put it that way. It was me, my personality, or
back to that, exactly.
my politics or my whatever. But it really fucked me up. That plays to the imposter syndrome and the ADHD and, you know, kind of feeling less than most of my life, you know? So it fucked me up. And as a matter of fact, I just told JoJo the other night, she was like, I made her cry on the phone. I called her after the show because I'm 5 years in with John. And just the other day we were standing there talking about something and I made a crack about, like, you know, I said something like, I don't even answer. If the business manager calls, I don't fucking answer because that's bad. There's no call that comes from the business manager that's good. So I'm never fucking answering. If you guys want to fire me, you're going to have to fucking call me yourself. And he laughed and he was like, I'll fucking cry if you ever quit. You can't quit. You know, and that was the first show I've played ever where I felt, oh, well, it's my gig to lose. This is mine. Now I can be here for a while if we all stay cool. And it's hard to find that because it's so easy for people to just be like, no, I don't feel like this. I'm just going to, it's so disposable, especially in Nashville, that it really, it toxically feeds intrusive thoughts of being like less than. It's the system makes, it really magnifies imposter syndrome because everyone's been fired for no good reason. You know, at least if there's, you know, if you're at a regular job and they're like, you blew your spreadsheets, and they dump you and be like, yeah, I fucked up my spreadsheets.
Right.
I didn't do my PTS reports or whatever. Right. But I mean, I don't know how many people I know, they're just like, yeah, things were going great. And hanging out with the artists, and they loved it. And then I got off the bus and the tour manager called me an hour later and said, you know, come back and get your shit.
Because the artist's wife called out your name in her sleep. That's the problem.
Or they didn't. Or you know, one of the artist's other friends didn't like you, or saw your Instagram feed and didn't like something, or they think you're too fat, or you're too old, or you're too white, or you're too black, or you're too female.
Pick you if I can get Brendan Buckley?
Yeah.
Come on, bro.
Fucking Buckley.
Come on, bro.
You know what? I never said. I never. I got on a sidetrack because my brain's fucked up. But Brendan is one of those guys. Earlier when I was talking about the couple of guys who went to Swift, I have a handful of friends that if I'm unliked, if somebody doesn't like me, I get it. I'm abrasive. If there's a handful of people, I have a very small list, then if you don't like them, mm-hmm, I know it's you're the fucking problem.
Absolutely.
Brendan is right in the middle of that list. You don't like
Buckley. Oh, he's number one on my list. Never mind.
If you don't like Brendan Buckley, you're the dick. It's you, for sure.
Of course.
Like, he's the sweetest guy. He's a phenomenal... He pisses me off, actually. He's infuriating because he's like handsome and hyper talented and the sweetest guy in the world, is super fucking level and centered, and he has the ability to, like, he's out on the road and I see his post, he's like, he got up early and he went and did his BJJ and he ate well and now he's gonna play a great show, and it's just like, you fucking dick, I can't do it. I wake up at 11 and I'm
and
like,
you're keeping a marriage together
and he's a great dad, and it's like, holy shit, I have a hard time, like I have to talk myself out of my bunk to go piss.
Yeah.
Like I'm because I'm hiding. Like, yeah, it's so hard for me to just to get through the damn day.
Okay, this hurts. I've got to get up now. Yeah.
Yeah. And I see guys like Brendan. I'm like, how do you achieve like this? Like, how do you get to be this whole person like Brendan is?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but didn't you work out this morning before?
Yeah, I did.
We pushed this episode back, people.
I have been making sure to do more lately. JoJo and I have decided that it is really in my best interest to live to be old. even though I have done...
By the way, just so you know, Kevin Murphy's roommate is JoJo Mayer, the great JoJo Mayer. They're roommates, and so they've been... I just want to fill them in on that. So
I'm engaged to JoJo. He
keeps mentioning JoJo.
So yeah, I'm engaged to JoJo Mayer.
Right.
I'm going to get a... You'll get a text
So what? Hey, it's a free country. It's a free country. So what? Love is love.
Jessica, who goes by Joelle, she and I have... She's not as good at drums as JoJo Mayer. She and I have decided that I'm going to try and stick around for a while.
But she's better looking. I'll say that. I've never met her. I'm just assuming. She's better looking than JoJo Mayer.
She's considerably better looking than JoJo.
Yeah, yeah.
Not that JoJo, not that you aren't a handsome...
Well, I said it.
Not that you aren't a handsome man.
I said it.
But, like, her fingers just aren't as fast as JoJo's.
You think JoJo Mayer's listening to this? You think he saw Kevin Murphy and said, I gotta hear that?
Not at all. Who's that fucking fuck?
I'm totally fucking with you.
I wish I could do his accent so I could do a version of him going, I don't know who the fuck this is.
I know.
Next, I'll listen to the Chamberlain again. Exactly. Or I'll listen to fucking, ooh, is this fucking, is this Steve Jordan? I'll listen to that. I'm just trying to make it. It seems like most of my 20s and 30s was just trying to fucking off myself in some way.
I know.
And it didn't get a whole lot better because I thought, oh man, I don't do cocaine anymore. And that was my 20s. Now I just drink a bottle of whiskey a day and play on it. And somehow I didn't get blackballed. Somehow I did well enough to like not ruin my career being a drunk dipshit. And I think a lot of it has to do with I played in bands. I left college because I realized I realized at the time I had no way of, my interests were music ed and composition. So like I had no way of knowing that 20 years later there would be a world where video games could propel a composition. You could be a composer just for video games. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, I'm not going to be able to duke it out with fucking Hans Zimmer and
right.
It's not like I'm going to take the ET contract from, I thought, okay, I'm not going to do that. And I thought, I'm going to be a terrible band director. So I'm just going to leave and go on the road. And I went on the road and just different bands would steal me from the band I was in. And I went from Full Stop to Egypt to Earth to Andy. We got a record deal. And I went to Jimmy's Chicken Shack. Then I went to Tonic. And then like, I just kept going. And then I finally ended up a gun, as it were, and like single name artists, would just hire me from the last guy. And like, I think playing in those bands saved my ass because not only did I learn some skills, but I also, it's harder to fire your band member. You have to really blow it. Mm. It's not like a hired gun. You'd be like, fuck this guy, get another player. But in a band, you get a lot of more chances. So I think being an idiot in the years I was an idiot being in bands saved me from being just like fired and ostracized and thrown out for being an idiot. I think I got lucky that I had friends that would just try to help me get along because they were all idiots too. And we were all kind of raging together. And by the time I started doing like real hired gun stuff, like I had kind of matured out of that. So I think I got lucky not like being trying to be a session guy in my 20s, because I think I would have like blown it.
Right.
I think rolling around in vans and trailers and buses up and down the Eastern Seaboard for 12 years saved me, because by the time I was out of that, I was also not partying as hard, and it wasn't as likely I would burn my name to the ground. Doing something stupid on the road with
of course.
With these artists.
Of course.
Which is, one of the reasons why I keep to myself,
All right. Well, look, man, I guess we got to wrap it up. Kevin Murphy, man.
I said nothing in 50 minutes or whatever.
Well, JoJo Mayer's not going to talk to me again, but that's okay. I mean,
Well, I didn't say he was ugly. I just said...
I didn't either.
I mean, he's an attractive man, but he's not as attractive as my JoJo.
Well, we'll have to go on... we'll go online when this is released. We'll do a whole thing. We'll write a whole thing about how handsome he is and just, exactly.
If you're that good, do you need to be hot?
You're like the apologizing thing. I'm sorry to anyone. I offended the Gilbert Gottfried. I'm sorry.
What? Man... Did I miss anything? Yeah, I guess I didn't really talk about a whole lot, did I?
I mean, we covered a lot, I think. I think we did pretty damn good, actually. Are you kidding
me? Well, if we ever do another
one... you drop names. I mean, the idea of, like, the guys... Go ahead. We were going to say...
Well, no. If we do a second one, I know every once in a while you come back and you revisit.
Oh, sure. Oh,
if we end up doing that, we'll have to... I liked the one where you slammed tequila with... Was it Pelton?
Yeah. Was that his idea, yeah. I had a taste test going.
We'll do that, but we'll do it with like micro doses, you know.
Ooh, I like
which,
that.
Which
idea.
Keep me, you know.
Do you do that? You take the micro dose?
I do.
I
don't really party.
Okay, I tried them. I tried them recently. I've been doing that, but it didn't pan out for me. It made me sleepy, which I didn't appreciate actually.
That happens depending on the.
Yeah, and then they were like adjusted, take a little more, and I tried that. It didn't really pan out for me. I wanted to be that jacked feeling because the person was telling me like it made them feel jacked.
Right.
And I thought I like that idea.
Yeah.
And I just got sleepy, so I didn't.
Yeah. It that has happened to me. I will say this. I think that long ago, people had it right, and then we're in this really weird kind of cultural space right now where it's surprisingly puritanical about a lot. And there's a lot of corporations got involved and kind of fucked up the progress. But I think that psilocybin's, I think they're going to be later on, I think we will find out that there was a whole lot of good that could have been done with them.
Well, you know the theory about, because what's his name? I forget the guy's name now. You'll know it. The idea of that's how the ape evolved, right?
Yeah.
That theory, yeah. Exactly. What's his name?
Stamets? Was it Paul Stamets or was it Leary? I don't know.
No, not Leary. No. Another guy who's still around. I don't want to say on Rogan and stuff. I forget. Anyway, yeah.
I like some of the early Rogan stuff, and I saw Stamets on there, and I was like, oh yeah, that's the, you know, I fucking love this guy. But like, I feel like there's a lot to be had. I mean, I know people that go kind of big with substances like Ibogaine and things like that, mm-hmm. that have mm-hmm. literally cured them of addiction
overnight
and things like that. And there, I know people that are helping, you know, soldiers deal with PTSD from some of these things.
Yes.
So like, there's a lot to it. And I will say this, small amounts, I don't trip. I don't like eat enough to like, you know, blah, blah, blah. I have done all of that. I've eaten fucking my body weight in acid, but you know, I think now microdosing, it helps me address my ego a little bit, and it kind of helps my ADHD because I can't. There's a lot of because my kidneys are like a level 2. Level 5 is you need new kidneys. You know,
back to fame. You want that fame when you need a kidney. See what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
Bump to the top of the list. Exactly. Come on, bro.
Exactly. Yeah. And I've damaged them up to a point where, and they don't self-repair like a liver. You know, so they're a little dinged up, and they're going to stay a little dinged up. You know, so I just don't want to make them worse. But I find that I have discovered that a lot of the medication that I could take for my ADHD. Will damage them more.
Right.
Like I can't take them. So this is an option for me to help organize some stuff. And to me, it's a lot more effective than drinking ever was. Drinking was just a numbing agent for me.
Of course.
And honestly, it was a way for me to actually be extroverted. You know, going back to people are like, oh, you're obnoxious. Well. Yeah, I might be, but it's not extroversion.
You're also half Irish.
And I'm also kind of...
Your name is Murphy. How do you not have a pint in your hand at some point? You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean?
It's tough. It's tough.
How do you not?
And I did for the first 35 years. You know, but like, I find that it helps me. I really do fight the mental, that imposter syndrome and I, you know, the doubt. I do fight that a lot, and
you have negative self voices. I understand.
I have intrusive shit that goes on in my brain, so it helps me gather that a little better. It helps me with a little perspective, but I don't. It may not be for everyone, but I think that like for me it helps, you know. And maybe you just wasn't the right thing for you.
Oh no, I'm happy to keep trying to keep. I've taken straight up mushrooms where it's like. The light, lightly, where we're going, you just hit that point of just a little bit of, that point.
Yeah.
Now we're not tripping. We're just,
yeah.
That's nice too. Nothing wrong with that. And nothing wrong with, I guess, going full on into the, you know, the, what was it, the go to Peruvian and jungle or wherever the hell you go.
The ayahuasca.
Right. Now, that might be a bit too much with, like, the vomit bucket and the, I don't know about all that, but, you know, maybe I'll take the show there. Who knows? Maybe, you know, we could find,
you know,
like,
what? We'll,
like,
go down and
the
do
jungle
some,
drummers, and we'll, you, do, you know.
You and me can go down there and we'll do some toad.
I was going to say, we'll tripping balls and we'll just roll tape. And,
I feel like, I truly believe that psychedelics, that we have gone awry when our society and government kind of turned against the seeking of psychedelics. I think we blew it. I think we'll find out more in the future that there's a lot of helpful stuff. Now, some people, it's just not for them, you know. So I don't push anything on anybody. I'm the same way with, like, the veganism. When
that's the thing. Like,
it's good for me.
Does Big Pharma want that out? No.
Fuck no. Come on. You know, and it, not unless they could monetize.
Stay on that. This episode is brought to you by Paxil. That's what we want, people.
Sure.
We want you on our shit, not the, you know.
Oh, yeah. If they can't monetize it, it's bad.
I think that's a big part of it. Let's be real.
For sure. That's the thing that a lot of people, when they look at my page and they're like, you're really political and stuff, and I'm like, you gotta understand something. Everything is linked.
That's a different thing.
Everything is linked together. The stuff we're talking about, and taxes and education, like, all of it is part, they're all part of the same conversation.
Thank God there's no politics on I'd Hit That.
And there shouldn't be. You know, the thing is that, like,
because you can get that anywhere.
You can get it everywhere.
People don't come here for that.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Nobody comes here for that.
And I think at the end of the day, I think that they want to believe in the community. And in our community of drummers, it really is unique. And I think a lot of people miss that. And it's really easy to go, like, yeah, the drumming community, it's great. No, it is more than great. It is a staggering place to live within. And I have never heard, even sports teams, when people are like, yeah, we're brothers for life. Yeah, no, you're not. You're on a sports team together, and you like each other, and you're bound over this love for this one thing. But I've seen the biggest, toughest, meanest looking fuckers on planet Earth, like, you know, helping each other out with tears in their eyes just because they play drum. They're completely different beliefs on fucking everything, you know, and it's more accepting. Every once in a while you'll get that asshole. And usually when you do, that person is a symptom of something else. They're either trying too hard, or they're scared about something, or they're angry that they didn't get their shot or something. But, like, as a general rule in our community, you kind of run into, everybody you run into is, you know, they're fucking cool. You know, most of them. And they're trying to be cool with each other. And every once in a while you get the guys, they pop up and they piss everybody off. But, like, as a general rule, we all love each other. And we all get it. Because if somebody can be like, yeah, man, I'm more of an Ian Pace guy than a Bonham guy. You're like, you motherfucker, cool. I love this one thing. You know, like, we can always grab something to talk about and bond over. And, you know, there's a respect. Like, I remember the first time I reached out to Brendan. He was like, come to my show. Playing with Perry tonight at, or next week at, like, City Winery. Come on out. You know, now, some kid walked up to me the other day. His name's Critter. And he walked up to me the other day. I was like, hey, man, we met last year. I'd love to blah, blah, blah. I was like, hey, hang on a quick. And my monitor guy was walking by. And I was like, hey, get him some ears. Put him on my mix. And he stood next to my kit the whole show and listened to mine. I was like, and he was like, holy shit, it was wild to listen to, like, what you listened. I was like, well, cool. Now, like, we all try to help each other. And I think that you know, I think that stuff like this, your podcast, and just the general attitude of the drumming community, it does and should be above the din of belief, indoctrination of any sort, good or bad, fucking politics, fucking sexuality, fucking any of that shit. It transcends it. We play, the drums are the centralized thing, and every one of us ran to drums from something. Like, we were attracted to the math of it, or we had, you know, it was the thing that loved us back, or, you know, whatever. But we all have similar. Even if somebody had, like, a great life when they were kids and their mom or dad, like, helped them do it, like, even if it's a really beautiful, great, loving story of how they found drums, we can all kind of relate because of this passion of it. We were all the nerds. It's like, we were all like, drums are my own. It's the only thing that I love doing when we were 16. You know, none of us liked doing anything else.
Right, exactly.
And here I am, fucking 1,000 years later, and I'm still like, yeah, fuck, I don't like doing anything else.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
It's a beautiful life, you see? It's a wonderful life.
It's not as beautiful as Brandon, but it's close.
It's more beautiful than JoJo Mayer. It is. And that's how I'm going to end it. I don't care. JoJo, you're going to...
I'm sorry, JoJo.
Well, yeah, he's not listening. I'm sorry. You're right. He's not listening.
He's not going to listen to this.
No, why would he listen? There's no purpose.
You know what? I know we're running over, but I got to say this. You know Dave King?
Yeah, of course.
You know, I don't know him, but somebody... I played a show... He posted one time that, like, he posted his schedule, right? And you could see that where he was, like, there was a day off in the, in like, where he was going to play tomorrow. And I was playing a show in that town. And I had some friends hit me up, like, oh, man, you should get him out. And I realized in that moment that he would hate my play. I was like, I'm not going to invite him out because A, I don't know him. We share a lot of friends. But B, I'm going to invite that guy to come watch me play a country show. Now, I don't think he's going to like my, I was like, I don't know him. And I was like, guys like that are intimidating. Cause I'm like, he's probably going to be like, fuck this fucking guy. Who's this fucking clown? I think JoJo would like listen to 4 minutes of this and be like, fuck this guy. Turn it off.
He's not listening. I'm sorry. Don't take that personally. It's just, I mean, come on. Like JoJo Mayer gives a shit about the Nashville series.
He does not.
No.
JoJo's going to move to town soon, and he'll do his. He'll launch Nerve on Broadway.
He might be microdosing right currently. That's I can tell you that. I don't know.
Belgium.
Yeah, of course. Why wouldn't he be? Why wouldn't you? Wouldn't you if you were JoJo Mayer?
Yeah,
I mean, enough with the paradiddles. I mean, Jesus, take a break. You know.
Enough with your one-handed bullshit, JoJo.
Exactly. Your single-stroke rolls.
You're fast. Congrats. I love you. Let me make you a little vegan pasta dish. I got nothing else to offer you. Nothing I play is interesting.
Vegan Irish Italian will make you a dish, exactly.
Him and Dave, like, nothing I play is of interest to you fucking guys. You're too fucking good.
Totally. Like... Well, you can invite Danziger. Maybe he'll appreciate.
I'll invite Styx.
There you go. Zach
Danziger probably won't like my drumming, but Styx will have plenty to talk about.
Exactly.
This fucking Goomba with his fucking...
Exactly.
You know, yeah.
We like shit talking. Kevin Murphy, thank you so much, man.
My man, thanks
for having me. Finally, we made it happen. Thank you.
Brother.
Absolutely.